Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So is it okay for the children to be, they don't understand, right?
Generally, they go outside, so because it's raining, I'll probably allow them to.
Oh, I see, I see.
And that's our own lesson outside.
And they have some sort of program?
Yes.
Okay. How old are you? 10. Okay. So let's do then, by special request. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized. Verse 13. Yeah, verse 13. Let me just have a sip of water. And you normally have a discussion, apparently. So, maybe I will ask you for some input here and there as we go, some comments, some words of wisdom. Okay, first of all, who can tell me what's the verse? 2:13. Famous. Dehi no smin yata dehe komaram yovanam jana tata dehantara praptir diras tatra na muyati. Translation: as the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So let's read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's not too long. It's not a short purport. So anyway, just try and listen. Give your attention. Listen carefully. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, and sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. You don't have a battery-powered sound system.
No.
No battery power. Okay. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering, according to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies, for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause of lamentation. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the supersoul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme cleavable or changeable against the principle of the supreme soul's being unchangeable. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the supreme exist eternally, sanatan, and are called shara. That is, they have a tendency to fall down into material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. The theory of reflection can be applied to the supersoul who's present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He's different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon, and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities, and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna. And the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. They are not on the same level, as it will be apparent in the beginning of the fourth chapter. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna, and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then their relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by the illusory energy Maya, then there's no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless, because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be an authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity, Arjuna, who's a forgotten soul, deluded by Maya. Let me read the verse again. Dehinosmin yata dehe, komaram yovanam jara, tata dehantara praptya, dhirastatra namuyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Okay, so let us say a few words about this, and then we will ask all of you, intelligent, competent devotees, to make some comments. Is that okay? All right. Yeah, why not? You can make a comment too. But not right now, okay? Later. All right, okay. So this is very important. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyutya Deshtarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunicha Ananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa Charubhyas Chakripa Sindhu Vyavacha. Padidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. You know, I haven't been here for years. Last time I was here, you know, I actually can't even remember. How many years ago was it? 3 years?
Four years.
It was... Well, I was there for one Ratha Yatra we had in the park.
The first one, yes.
In the park.
2007.
Oh, that's 11 years ago. Then I went to one, well, a few, where we go around that way, and it's the
hall.
The hall.
Yeah, it is.
A few times. Okay, anyway, let's not worry about it. Time changes everything. So anyway, this is very important. And this is one of the sort of the differences, you could say, between Krishna consciousness and other religious processes, is that Krishna consciousness, in a very practical way, it talks about how we have come into this lifetime. This lifetime. How it is. What was the cause why I got this body, Manjari got that body, and everybody else, everybody, even the animals, but particularly the humans, how everyone got the particular body they've got now, and how they were born in the particular places, in the particular circumstances, situations that everyone was born in. And that's important, because, like, you know, with you know, not wanting to be disrespectful, but in Christianity, and I've discussed this on a number of occasions, even with their priests and people like that, they don't even try to give an explanation why someone is born in a rich family, someone's born in a very poor family, someone is born in an average family. Or how about this? Someone is born in a female body, someone else in a male body. No, these types of considerations, and they're important. They're very important. And, you know, all the other sort of related types of elements which make up the picture of the situation that a person enters into in this material world. Like I said, they don't even try. They just say, well, God, you know, God just did it. But if it's just God just did it, and it's just like, well, you know, accident, or, you know, if God just did it, why did God arrange that some people are born in very... you know, like, what's the term? Sort of, what's the term? Anyway, just very good situations. Some are born in very bad situations. It was just God. If God made a decision that you will be born in very good situation, very rich and highly intelligent, in a very nice country. But then someone else, they are born in some just, you know, right now, I don't know if you follow the news at all, but you got all these refugees. Actually, in many parts of the world, I was actually thinking of in Mexico now, coming up from Central America. I think now they're in Mexico and they want to enter America. There's thousands of them. They had to leave wherever they came from because of like civil war and all these super heavy situations. And there's a few thousand of them coming together. And I read, I know, a couple of weeks ago, that as they're traveling, one woman gave birth to a child. As this whole group of a few thousand people, they're mainly walking, and they're moving, they're going up, they want to enter America. So how is it? Someone gets born on the road, you know, in a refugee situation. It's one thing being born in a poor family. It's another thing being born as like a stateless person, just a complete, you know, lost person. Or take, you know, recently, this one very famous, the most famous scientist in the world in our time, Hawking's. You heard of Hawking's?
Yes.
You heard of Hawking's? He just died recently. So he had big brain. He was really, in sort of mathematical terms and that way of thinking, he was incredibly intelligent. But the body he had, you familiar with that?
Yes.
His body was just hopeless. Worse than hopeless. Just, it's one thing having a physical disability or something. He's just totally incapacitated. So this is, I said at the beginning, this is the difference between Krishna consciousness and other religious processes. And it's not only in regard to this point, but it just, you know, it's an example of how Krishna consciousness explains in very practical ways. Like, you know, very clear, practical. You can see how it works. How Krishna consciousness just makes it all clearer. I know when I was at school, are you still at school?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
What class are you in?
Grade 11, going to matric.
Okay. So when I was in school, I was in a Christian school, Anglican school in New Zealand. And every day we went to chapel. Every day. And every day, or at least I think it was like 3 days a week or something, we had religious classes as part of the school curriculum. And I was one of these people. I had many questions. So I would always ask, we called him Padre. I would always ask the Padre questions. And sometimes he couldn't answer. You know, these types of questions. And sometimes he couldn't answer. And I'd get on his case. And he'd get very angry with me. Or he'd just become very upset. Because they don't have answers. But in Krishna consciousness, we do get the answers. And it's very important. Because if you understand how you got into this life, what the different factors were which caused it, then you can see about getting into your next life. Yeah. It's just, it's practical. And it's very useful. And of course, you know, this idea that God just, you know, he just puts someone, by God's arrangement, someone is born on the road amongst the refugees from some Central American country where there's a revolution, and someone else is born in a rich family in America. If it's just God, then it seems God is unfair, wouldn't you say? I mean, it must be. It must be. If it's simply God's decision, he just decided, and there was no other consideration, no other factor he had to take to bear in mind why this one should be born here and why that one should be born there. If it's more or less, you know, you could say like whimsical, then it means, you know, well, it means, excuse me, I got a bit of a cold. It means God is not such a nice guy. Yeah. We would like to think he's a really nice guy. Not just, you know, a fairly nice guy, but just, you know, super, super duper, the best. So there was one Jewish rabbi. Probably you don't know much about Judaism, and I don't also, except that it's sort of like the original form of Christianity. Anyway, there was this one Jewish rabbi, and he was trying to figure out these types of questions. Why do people get born in different situations? Why do different things happen to different people? So, and he wrote a book, and the book was called Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And his name was Kirshner, Harry Kirshner. Not Hare Krishna, but it's very similar. I never saw the book, but I heard about it a bit. You can probably look it up on Google. Why do bad things happen to good people? And, you know, of course, the next question would be, why do good things happen to bad people? And then the final following question could be, why does anything happen to anyone? Why? So, but his particular point was that God, no, how is it that God allows or even causes to happen these different things, particularly bad things to good people? And this poor rabbi, he couldn't figure it out. He struggled, and he couldn't figure it out. So in his book, he offered two theories. One was that in the beginning, God was very good and very intelligent. And because he's good and very intelligent, he was able to see that only good things happen to good people. Because he's very, you know, he's very good, always the right thing, never the wrong thing. So therefore, and he's highly intelligent, so, you know, he can make arrangements so that good things happen to good people. And then the bad things, they only happen to the bad people. So that was one part of the, two theories. So that's one theory. Well, no, hang on. So that's the first part. In the beginning, God is good and intelligent. So good things are happening to good people. But then there are the thing diverges into two parts. Either God remained good, but sort of lost his intelligence or his abilities. Therefore, even though he's good, and he wants good things to happen to good people, but he lost the ability to keep control. And therefore, against his will, bad things started happening to good people, and good things started happening to bad people. Although he didn't want it like that, but he became unable to stop it working like that sometimes. Then the other, you know, that's one side. The other side is that he is still intelligent enough and capable enough. He can organize anything, any way. But he's not so good now. And because he's not so good, then he doesn't care so much. Ah, let a bad thing happen to a good person. Ah, well, that's the way it goes. You see? You follow? It's very, very important. We must think about these things. Because when you're preaching to the people around here, you can try and use these ideas. And at least those who think more, it'll click. Yeah. This makes sense. Because this is the thing about Krishna consciousness. It makes sense. It's not just like, well, you know, that's the way it is. There's sense. So what do you think of that? Either God is good but incapable, therefore bad things are happening to good people and good things happening to bad people. Or God is still capable but not so good, and therefore he doesn't care so much, and let bad things happen to good people, tough luck. So we don't agree with either viewpoint. We don't agree. And if you think about it, you'll see it doesn't make sense. Neither of these two makes proper sense. Yeah. But what makes proper sense is that, and Prabhupada mentioned it in the purport to some degree, that we have acted in certain ways in the past, and therefore we have, you could say, earned to be born wherever we got born. And then since that time, we've lived in certain ways, and so we have kind of created the situation we're in at present, and we can also create the situation for our next life. Yeah, because just imagine Adolf Hitler. You heard of Adolf Hitler? Okay, how old are you?
11.
Okay. Anyway, it's good you haven't heard of Adam. But he was not a nice person. He was just a horrible person, I tell you what. He made the National Party look like nice guys, philanthropists. Anyway, okay, Adolf Hitler. He died in one way or another. People don't know exactly how it happened, but at the end of the Second World War, he died. And, you know, if you know about Adolf Hitler, you know what he was responsible for. He was responsible for the deaths, the destructions of tens of millions of people. Whoa. It was heavy. It was just heavier than heavy. It's inconceivable almost that he was responsible. So, now he's dead. What sort of situation do you think he's going to be born in? Think about it. Or, you know, you've heard of Kentucky Fried Chicken, haven't you? Oh, you haven't? Wow. You're good. You're really good, actually. Anyway, or is it... Yeah, okay, say Kentucky Fried Chicken. They're all over the world. They're everywhere. And, you know, every day they are selling how many millions of people chicken? I don't know, but it's a huge amount. So, yeah, what's his name? The guy behind it?
Colonel Saunders.
Do you know? Colonel Saunders. They have a picture of this guy.
Yeah.
Their sort of logo. Colonel Saunders. So he's behind the whole thing. Every day millions of chickens being killed. And he's making money. He's making money out of it. So what sort of situation do you think he's going to be born in? Or, you know, McDonald's. Mr. McDonald. They even advertise that they have sold, you know, some number of billions of burgers. Billions. So, Mr. McDonald, what sort of birth do you think he's going to get? That you must know, it's going to really be bad. It's just going to be catastrophic. Whew. Have you heard of McDonald's? Okay. Anyway, shame, but it's all right. We'll let you off. You were doing well. So this is the thing. You know, as people live, they create a future. So Adolf Hitler lived in a certain way, and he created that sort of future. So if, now just imagine now, Adolf Hitler, he is now being born in his next life. I just can't imagine what it would be, but it would be very, very bad. It would be so bad. Or like these doctors in South Africa, they perform abortions. They perform abortions. You know, there are advertisements here and there around the city, cheap abortion or something like that. So it means those doctors are killing children. Killing children. And a doctor, one of these doctors, abortion doctors, maybe that doctor kills, say, 1,000 children over a period of few years or some period of time, probably. So what would you expect if Krishna, if God is both, he's good, but he's capable. He is able to see that people get what they deserve. And you can't, you know, dodge it. You can't talk your way out of it. You can't buy your way out of it. He is capable enough to see that people get what they deserve. So that doctor who's an abortionist, what do you expect him to, what sort of situation would you expect him to be born in?
A bad situation.
Huh?
A bad situation.
Well, okay, yeah. But how about more specifically? How about that he, when he's in the womb of his mother, that he has aborted.
Mm.
How's that?
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
What goes around comes around.
That's fair. What can you say? It's just fair. And if he did it 1,000 times, well, 1,000 times, and not 999, and not 1,001, but 1,000. Yeah, because Krishna, he's sharp. You know, when I go through the security in the Johannesburg airport, which is, you know, every few days, I say to the security people, sharp, sharp. Anyway, that's okay. But Krishna is super sharp. In fact, he's totally sharp. And he can see, and he will see, and he does see that people get exactly what they deserve. It's a little bit like in a bank. In a bank, if you're just working and being paid monthly, then you don't have so many transactions with the bank. But if you have a business and you're buying things and you're selling things every day in the business, then every month you may have 1,000 transactions easily. Some will have many thousands of sales and purchases and wages and all sorts of things. But and all the money from the sales is going into the bank every day, and the money being paid out for purchasing things is being paid out every day. But at any point, on any day, the bank can tell you exactly how much you've got, to the cent, not just some rough figure, you know, approximately something. They can tell you to the cent exactly how much money you've got. So if a bank can do that, what can Krishna do? Don't worry. He knows what's everyone is due, and he sees that they're getting it. But of course he's also, well, he's good in the sense that it's very fair. Krishna, it's not that if someone speaks to him nicely, like sometimes when you're at school, I don't know if you're aware of this, but sometimes if you speak to the teacher nicely, he'll give you better marks. Did you know that?
Yeah.
But if you, you know, if you do nonsense, he may mark you down.
Yes.
So, but Krishna's not like that. That you can sort of trick him, bribe him, and then he'll treat you better. You know, or if you're like not so pleasant with him, then he'll treat you bad. Krishna just, he's good in that it's all fair. Everything is completely fair. And of course, if you take shelter of him, and if you want to go back to Godhead, oh, then he really helps. But the thing is, though, as we were saying in the beginning, that we, just like, you know, someone goes to school. Of course, different people, some people are more intelligent, some are not as intelligent. That's there. But if someone is sort of normal intelligence, approximately average, but if they work hard, they can do well. And they can go to university. And if they work hard, if they're of, you know, just normal intelligence, they can get a good degree and then get a good job and get good money. But someone else, they may also be of sort of normal intelligence. But if they don't work hard, and then even if they get into university, but if they don't work hard there, they will not get a degree, they will not get a good job, and they'll just, you know, that's what their life will be like. It just won't be so materially nice. So in other words, in this life, in many ways, people are already creating their futures. Already. By working hard at school, university, getting a good job and a good future materially. Creating a better future. So all these things, you know, all these principles apply. And this is such a nice thing about Krishna consciousness, that it helps people understand how to create the right type of future and also to understand their past in practical terms, which make very good sense. So when you're out there, distributing books, do you go to, what's his name, who has the shopping mall? Maponya, Mr. Maponya. You know him, don't you? You know him personally? I think I may have met him when he just had the supermarket. You know?
Me and Rupa met him several times.
But do you still keep seeing him sometimes? You should, you know. Because I'm sure, if you talk to him about food for life at least, I'm sure he would support. He'd definitely support. Plus, you know, if you do it through the organization, he gets tax benefit. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah. Oh yeah, do you go to Maponya's shopping mall and distribute books there sometimes?
Used to, Maharaj, devotees from the Indonesia, they used to organize that and then we go there and distribute, but now they stopped.
It's a good place for distributing books.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, my point though is when you meet people, because you know what you can do if you go to a place like the Maponya's now, the big shopping mall, then you can just arrange to set up a table. You know, you don't have to run around approaching people, which may disturb the security guards. You just get a table and make a little display. So many devotees do this around the world now. Oh, so many. And it's easy. You just sit there and people come and look at the books and it's nice. But my point is, when you meet people, you should try and explain these things to them. Because at least those who think, you know, there's a lot of people, they don't think much beyond, you know, I need money and I need, you know, the basic necessities of life. But still, there are people who think. And thinking people, when you introduce these ideas which they can relate to, yeah, in ways they can understand, you know, many of them it'll be like, wow, I never heard this before. This is explaining things that I was wondering about, but I never got a good explanation for. So Krishna consciousness explains. And not simply if we live in a certain way, then we go to heaven or hell or somewhere. But it explains, how is it we got born in our different situations? Just look at us here in this room. Look at us. Just our bodies. Don't we have very different bodies? We have really different bodies. How did it happen? And don't tell me it just happened. Or God just did it. Don't tell me that. That's totally unreasonable. But then you can give an explanation. Yeah. So that's what Krishna's talking about in this verse. It's such a famous verse. You know, Prabhupada, there's a set of books, Prabhupada's lectures on Bhagavad Gita. It's a set of books. Every lecture has been typed out and you can read the lecture. And you can see there how many times Prabhupada lectured on this verse or that verse or any particular verse. And when you see that Prabhupada lectured on a certain verse a lot, that indicates that it has some special importance. This verse was the verse which Srila Prabhupada lectured on the second most. The second most. There are, if I remember correctly, it's like 12 or 13 recorded lectures on this verse. You probably don't know what's the verse that Prabhupada lectured on the most. It's Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 1. There are about 25 recorded lectures on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 1. But this verse we're looking at, chapter 2, verse 13, is very important. And you get an idea of its importance just based on the fact that Prabhupada lectured on it the second most of any verse. So what do you think? Tell me what you think about what we said. What's your comment?
People's karma determine the next life.
Yeah. Their karma. Mm. And how do they get their karma?
By their actions.
Okay. And how do they get their actions? It's important. By their desires.
Oh.
Yeah. So you got to be careful. First thing, be careful of what you desire.
Sure.
Yeah. Because unless you can control yourself, whatever your desires are, they'll force you to act. Because it's hard, you know. Like people, I'm sure you know people who smoke a lot. And a lot of these people who smoke a lot of them, they try to stop. A lot of them. But a lot of them, they can't. Because the desire is too strong. And they just, you know, they can't stop themselves. Anyway, that brings up Krishna consciousness, because if we develop our Krishna consciousness, we can change our desires. Then we learn that we shouldn't desire too much, you know, to become rich and famous and have the famous Soweto black BMW with black windows. Is that still the cool thing? It was when I was here last. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, who's the next one? What's
Leela Kirtan.
What's your name?
Leela Kirtan Devi Dasi.
Leela Kirtan Devi Dasi. What's your comment? Or question? Thinking about it. Yes, Prabhu. What's your name?
My name is Padmarama.
Sorry?
Padmarama.
Padma?
Pata.
Padmarama.
Padmarama, sorry, okay. Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, so Maharaj, like, from the verse I've I understand that, you know, karma is there, what goes around comes around, and the situations that, or wherever you are born, is because of your karma, or whatever you've been in the past.
Yeah.
Okay, Marai, let's say you're born in a family, especially the African families, because they're into ancestral worship, I would say. Yeah. So, you are in that particular family, and okay, that's me actually. At home, they perform ancestral ceremonies like almost every month.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And since I've been a devotee, it's been a problem because it's causing conflicts between me and my family.
Okay.
Because now I tried to stop meat and I've been doing so good. But then when they perform their rituals, sometimes they use blood, you know, such things. And
they sacrifice cows or...
A cow, a chicken, or a goat or something. And I don't do that. But for them, it's this which... I seem disrespectful, you know, because I don't follow the family rituals.
Right.
I'm still under parental care, you know. So it's a problem for me as a devotee.
Yeah, sure, I understand.
I'd like to know how can I work out that situation.
Okay. See, you know, your situation in principle is not unusual. In principle, meaning... You know, if you're from a white family, an Indian family, a Chinese family, a Japanese family, a Russian family, etc., etc., you know, all these, they all have their cultures. They all have every single sort of culture or social tradition. Yeah. So, in principle, and when, you know, the children, meaning, you know, your age or in their 20s and so on, they're still young people, basically, and they start becoming devotees. So, you know, even the Indian families, and, you know, you might be surprised to hear this, but even... It happens in Indian families, and the parents are devotees. But if they see the son or daughter getting too enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness, and they, for example, now the son or daughter wants to live in the temple and become full-time devotee, it's sometimes, I would say, it's not uncommon at all. It's a problem. Yeah. And the parents are devotees, initiated. Because parents, you know, being a parent, wow, that's a big thing. Being a parent and having children, that's a big thing. And the sort of, we call it sometimes the knot in the heart for the parents towards the children. It's a big thing. And what to speak of an African family or a white family or, you know, Chinese or etc., or just different families. So the first thing is that don't become overwhelmed by it. You can deal with it. It can be done. But it's like a special test from Krishna for you. How now you're taking up Krishna consciousness and you want to do it. How now, on one hand, to try to help them understand that, you know, it's not like you're doing something weird, something crazy, or, you know, something totally extreme. You're actually doing a good thing, which is, You know, it's somewhat different from what they're doing, but it's not totally different. Because in the, at least the Vedic tradition, they have worship of the ancestors. It's a very big part of it. Very big part of the Vedic tradition. Worship of the ancestors. And animal sacrifice. It's a very big thing. If you go to Durban and you speak to sort of a typical Hindu family, you'll find in many cases they do, or at least in the past, they were involved regularly in animal sacrifice. Not really the Gujaratis, right? They don't do that. But like the Tamils, the Hindis, these are different divisions amongst the Indians. Yeah. So it's not unusual at all.
So Maharaj, what I want to understand, it is karma.
Okay, hang on. I'm in the middle of trying to answer your question. Yeah. You can write a book about this after what I've said. So this is the first thing. This is one thing. Try to, I mean, you've got to do it very carefully, but try and help them to understand it's not so different, actually. And it's a good thing. And then you, in just in your general behavior and the way you sort of deal with them as a family member, really do your best to be a good son. And not like, you know, sometimes when people, young people become devotees, they become, you could say, over-enthusiastic, even approaching fanatical. And they try to convert the whole family. And they tell their parents, listen, you know, you're demons. And, you know, you got to stop eating meat today. Otherwise, you know, I'm leaving you. Don't be extreme. Be normal. You know, as much as reasonably possible, be normal by their standards. And be nice. And then, because Krishna consciousness, if you practice properly, you actually become a better person, a more pleasant person. The tendencies like to be angry and argumentative and, you know, just sort of like negligent, all these types of tendencies reduce. They rarely reduce if you practice nicely. And of course your parents, you know what they're doing? They're watching you. They're watching you. And when they see that in fact you are actually becoming a better person and like a better son, even though, you know, you're a bit unusual, something like that. Like maybe you've shaved your head but you've left a lightning flash. And then, you know, you've got this thing at the back there, whatever it is. So you're a bit unusual. You're a bit unusual. But actually you're really nice. And you're really helpful. You follow what I'm saying? They're watching. And when they see things like that, it impresses them. And you'll be surprised what will happen. What can happen if you do like that carefully and nicely, you'd be surprised. They can start taking an interest in Krishna consciousness, actually. Because many of them, you know, like, you know what it's like in African society. There's the old ancestor worship with animal sacrifice and so on, and the Muti man and all that. But then there's a lot of Christianity. Right? Yeah, there's a lot of Christianity. And then there are mixtures of the two. So the thing is, a lot of the African people, they're not really satisfied in religious and spiritual terms, as sort of higher terms of what is life and how am I living. they're not really satisfied with what they're doing. And when they see someone who they know is doing something somewhat different and is becoming a better person and a happier person and a nicer person, it has a really big effect on them. So anyway, but certainly it's your karma that you were born in your family, just as much as it was mine in my family, and the same with everybody else. But the thing about karma is, when you, as you become a devotee, you can change your karma. That's what I was saying about changing desire. As you become a devotee, and you understand that, you know, I used to desire smoking dhaka and going to the nightclub, and I wanted to get the black BMW 3 Series with the black windows and play the music loud or whatever. But as you start to see that actually it's not such a good way to live, so your desires change. Your desires change and you become able to be more self-controlled and then live your own life. And not just the life of your desires. So what do you think of that? But how long have you been doing Krishna consciousness?
Yes. Since I was young. I think I was 7 or 8.
And what's your age now?
25.
Oh.
These are the devotees who grew up here.
Yeah, really. You're a senior devotee. Anyway, look, you know, your parents, if they don't know by now that you're Hare Krishna, there's no hope for them. But, yeah, don't. You got to use your intelligence. Intelligence is a very important thing in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna gives intelligence if he sees we want to use it nicely in his service. Anyway, you can always move out and just visit them from time to time, and then you just live your own life.
But also, Maharaj, the parents are very supportive, actually.
Are they?
His parents are very supportive.
Okay.
Some of his sisters, they're coming here.
Okay.
They were devotees even before. So
really?
To a large degree, especially the mother and the father, they're very supportive of what he's doing.
See, maybe you're too pessimistic or, you know, something like that. You're holding yourself back.
Not really, Maharaj. Because they sometimes challenge me. You know, when you're at home, my problem is not there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing. Yeah. You have to prove yourself.
No,
well, Maharaj just said that. Right?
Yeah.
You have to prove yourself.
You've got to learn.
Yeah.
You got to learn these things. And then when they challenge, you come straight back at them, and if you do it nicely, then they'll say, oh yeah, you're right.
Because the problem is, Maharaj, they say, I don't want to perform their ancestral rituals, and I don't want to eat their food. But when I come with food, I want them to eat it. So that's the problem.
Okay. Anyway, you know, it's nice if they take prasad, but you don't need to force them.
Yeah.
But I think you should, you know, you're a big boy now. You should move out. And then you go visit them from time to time and you live your own life. Or whatever.
Most of the devotees that are around, the parents are very supportive.
Oh.
You know, just recently, Maharaj, you did a program for the kids.
Right.
You know, I selected about 100 kids.
Right.
And we did a program outside there. And then we build there
on the street here.
On the street, Maharaj, yeah. We did a covenant, what you call the hill. We built a big covenant here. And the parents came. You know, some of the parents came. And they're very appreciative of what we are doing.
Yeah.
So most of the parents, they are supportive of what they are doing. They may not understand, but they do support them. Because most of them, they push them to come to Krishna Consciousness. He knows that.
Well, yeah, because I think partly at least, it's because they see the children are becoming better.
Yeah.
and happier. But I think, you know, here, there's so many adults like your parents, that age group, older people, who, you know, if things are presented to them nicely, they'll be very happy to get involved.
My family, my entire family, they are Roman Catholic, most of them. Now the problem is that they say that they don't like this Krishna conscience, because of they say it's idol worshipping, and then idol worshipping it's evil for them. So I want to convince them that idol worshipping it's
okay.
It's not that evil the way they think or they build it in their mind. That it's so, how do I come across to, like, make them to understand that this is Krishna? Because of last time I came with my cousin here, and then I offer obeisances to Prabhupada, and I offer obeisances, and then she asked me, why are you doing this? Why can you do this to dolls? These are dolls. This is... So I want something, like, to tell them that idol worshipping, it's not a problem. It's,
okay.
So how should I... come
I mean, first thing is, it's sort of just a point of language, but idol is the wrong term for us to use, because idol means just some concocted sort of figure, imaginary type of figure. But, you know, very interesting, in Catholicism, they also use, they call them icons. If you go to any bigger Catholic church, they'll definitely have Jesus there and Mary and various others. It's just a normal part of Catholicism to have that. They normally, as far as I am aware, they call them icons. So they have these figures, and they offer things to them. We may bow down. Some of them bow down also. But, you know, it's just a normal part of Catholicism. And what to speak of, like, of course, you probably wouldn't be familiar with the Orthodox traditions, what Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox... But they, even more, they use icons. And, you know, they have these, they're famous icons in different parts of Europe, at least. Different icons that people pray to them, they get things. They come and offer flowers to them. If you do a little research into Catholicism, you'll see that, you know, they don't have as deep a philosophical understanding of how it all works, but they have icons who they offer respect to. So that's one thing. And, you know, bowing down, that's okay. It's a little different, but it's not very different at all. You know, there's sort of like the classic explanation which Prabhupada would give, which is, first of all, that, you know, we have a relationship, an eternal personal relationship with God. And God, well, you know how Jesus is portrayed usually? He has long hair, he has a beard, he has robes of some sort. And it's pretty universal that Jesus is portrayed like that. So we all have eternal personal relationships with God. And according to the Bible, man is made in the image of God. Are you familiar with that? You know much, you've heard that before. Man is made in the image of God. Means God has two eyes. two arms, two legs, etc. Man is made in the image of God. And then again, you know, God can appear in different forms. You know, they take Jesus to be, some of them take him to be God, at least the Son of God. They worship him. So God can appear as he likes. And, you know, Christianity is a Middle Eastern tradition. Israel means Middle East, geographically. It's not an African tradition. It's not a European tradition. It's a Middle Eastern tradition. In other parts of the world, they have other traditions of worshiping God in a personal way. The deity form of the Lord is based on scriptural descriptions of the body of God, the form of God. And out of his kindness, he accepts the deity form so we can approach him in personal ways. And in Catholicism, see, Protestantism, I don't know if you know much about the difference between Protestantism and Catholicism. When Protestant, you understand what's Protestant? The Anglicans, what are they called? Anyway, all the other groups, except the Catholics, they're Protestants. The Methodists, the Baptists, all these people, they're different versions of Protestants. They didn't like that in the Catholic churches they had the icons. If you go to a Protestant church, they'll have the cross, but they don't have any other symbols or signs or anything. It's kind of non-specific, not very personal. But man is made in the image of God. God, in other parts of the world, the Lord has appeared. You know, in the Middle Eastern or European traditions, we may not know so much about that. But there are records there. And he appears in personal forms. And he accepts our worship through those personal forms out of his mercy. Prabhupada gave the example of a letterbox. Of course, now you don't have so many letterboxes where you can just put a letter in the box and they come and pick it up, the post office, and then they deliver it. So if someone just puts their own box outside their own house and puts the letter in their own box, because it's not authorized, they're not going to come and pick up the letter and deliver it. But because the deity form is authorized, according to ancient tradition, then we understand when you worship the Lord through the deity form, or as the Catholics do, using their icons, then the Lord accepts that service. So that's the basic idea. Hare Krishna. What's next?
Find the light in Kirtan.
Okay. Kirtan? Now's the right time?
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.